opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
The fact that every politician respects voters, and we have enough because the city voting power here to change anything that needs to be changed.
Politics, progress, game boards, objects, viewed like pawns to be changed up our mindset. Value of the dollars at the center of this conflict. The lives only matter if they serve to make a profit. But if the midget sees further on the shoulders of the giant, then we should see further than the tyrant and build a future within alliance where success is our science in the quest to go higher. It's the heart of the city.
Wake up, world. You are listening to The Heart of the City. Happy Wednesday. I'm your host, Malik Boyd. I hope that wherever you are in good spirits and all is truly well. The show topic today, The Goodfellas, not the movie, but how we redefine the meaning Goodfellas, how we redefine the impact that Goodfellas have. We're taking that term and we're going to own it today and discuss the impact that a positive, intentional, and focused man or men have in our community. If you have watched the news over the last week, there is much to talk about on the international front and on the local front. There was a conversation with Russia that occurred that everyone is in an uproar about, not necessarily the conversation, though some are, but rather the report that came back from the chief executive, and how one version came out and a day later, less than 24 hours later, in fact, another revision, to that story, hit the fan. And so we're dealing with that. And how we look and are perceived on a international front, on the world stage, but locally at home, we're still dealing with, regardless of the city, Chicago is still dealing with multiple murders in relatively short periods, anywhere from 10 to 24 hours, series of individuals, youth, black men are being gunned down. Philadelphia, we're dealing with the same thing, young children on the streets of North Philadelphia being shot, first of all, it shouldn't happen to begin with, but in a period of time where they should be enjoying themselves and their lives and should be able to play on our streets safely. But yet grandparents and parents and caretakers are fearful, for their young people and, you know, it's at a point where you have to say a prayer, you know, before you let your kid out to play, which is absolutely insane. My mother would say you pray about everything. But, you know, the truth is you would hope that your child can enjoy an afternoon in their own neighborhood on their own street without their life or their lives being placed at risk. But such is not the case. And so, you know, we always start this show off in prayer. To that end, I am absolutely excited to have Dr. Kia Everett, senior pastor from Destiny Christian Worship Center, on the line with us this afternoon. It's an absolute pleasure to have you, Dr. Everett, on The Heart of the City.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm blessed. I'm on the side of the grave. The lights are still on, as I always say. So
yeah, that's great, right?
I have no complaints. And how are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Same as you. I'm on the side of the grave, so all is good.
There we go. And so, Doctor, you know the issues of the day, not only in your capacity as a senior pastor, but we'll talk more about how God has used you throughout the years in your intellectual capacity in counseling and behavior specialists and cognitive behavioral therapy. But you see the issues. You know what the families are dealing with. You know what our community, our city, is dealing with. And so we're going to ask you to lead us into our 2-minute prayer for the city.
Sure. Father, we thank you right now for this day that you have allowed us to see. Father, we thank you and we honor you that without you, we are nothing.
I think we lost Dr. Everett. Let me give it one more second. Did we lose her? All right, so let's do this instead. Dr. Everett, let's have Dr. Everett call back in. I'll finish the prayer up. We'll tag team and go into the show. Heavenly Father, you heard from the voice of your own, Dr. Everett. You know the issues, but you also created us. You are the solution. So right now we're asking you to come before us. Take me out of self. Allow this show to edify you. Allow the words, the information, the energy and the synergies that are created be pure and allow it to be effective. You know that if we do not work together, all of this falls apart. And so give us unity. Help us to play our respective roles, but also to support and love each other in an honorable and true way, knowing that you are the true source of love. And so give us your brand of love, not only to each other, but to ourselves, learning that we are uniquely and wonderfully made. Let's celebrate you and what you have done in us. You know the issues of our leadership. You know what is needed long before those individuals got elected, not just nationally, but in the state and even in the local offices around the country. And so be with those individuals. Give them the courage that they need to stand up. If courage is not there, give them courage and let them know that you are walking with them. Enable all the partisan bickering to cease. Allow ears to be unblocked so that they can hear various perspectives. And more importantly, those within the community, allow us to love each other and understand that we all see the world just a little bit different from the other person. And our viewpoints are just that, our viewpoints. They are not law. And allow us to share our viewpoints and understand each other just a little bit more. Allow our churches and houses of worship to become the power centers that they are, and realizing that you did not design government to be the power center, but it is faith and what we stand on that is the true power. Allow that to be restored and to grow within our communities. And we'll be careful to give your name the honor and the praise now and forever. Amen.
Amen.
So when Dr. Everett calls back, I'm going to get her back on because she has some amazing things to say. But I got to go to a break. We got to pay bills. And so the show topic, which I love, The Goodfellas, we're going to talk about not the movie, but the great men in our community. And I'm going to deal with a few of them today. And we're going to talk about their stories and how we create impact and make an impact, and why it's important to have our men in the position of impact within our community. Take out your stethoscope, place it on the radio dial. You're listening to The Heart of the City. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Malik Boyd, the host of The Heart of the City radio show. Have you been injured at work? Work injuries create a great deal of stress and financial hardship for the entire family. Uniting the City, Easy Scripts is a national home delivery pharmacy service helping injured workers with all of their medication and medical equipment needs. They remove the problems injured workers have filling their prescriptions. And with their free home delivery and no out-of-pocket expenses for medications, Uniting the City Easy Scripts makes it easier for injured workers to focus on getting better and taking care of their families. Enrollment is quick and easy. Call a Uniting the City Easy Scripts customer care specialist today and let them take this burden off your shoulders. The call is free. 855-729-3939. That's 855-729-3939. Paid for by Easy Scripts Pharmacy.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff. But still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Where is your there? Your happy place. Your go-to destination. Maybe it's that hidden cove by the lake. Or that place an hour and a half away on Route 6 that serves the world's best meatloaf. Or maybe it's home. At Valero, we have the fuel to get you there. Wherever there is. Because Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
We're back. You're listening to The Heart of the City. The show topic today, The Goodfellas. I got a few of them in the green room, and I'm going to bring them out, and we're going to have an amazing time talking about the impact that is needed and can be created from great men in great positions. I want to go right back to Dr. Kia Everett. Let's get her right back on the line. Doc, are you there?
I'm here. I'm so sorry. I didn't even know we were disconnected.
Listen, the devil is alive. So is Sprint, Nextel, and T-Mobile. But you are back on the air. And so I tag team. I saw your hand go up. So I tagged you like WWF Saturday morning wrestling. I finished the prayer. But I want to talk about the great work that you have done and are doing in the community. And so you're a product of the Philadelphia school system, Lincoln High. You guys need to stand up. Those Lincoln alumni, one of your own is here. Westchester University, stand up. One of your own is here. But Doc, you have the bachelor's in science for criminal justice.
Yeah.
You have the master's in human services. You went to Capella and then got a master's of science in mental health or public service leadership.
Public service leadership.
Right. And then the doctorate in Christian counseling, and then the certificate in family life counseling. You're a licensed behavior specialist with a certification in cognitive behavioral therapy. You're a certified life coach. You can do notary if need be.
Yes.
You're a licensed minister, a senior pastor, a consecrated bishop, and presiding prelate. Then you launched your own mental health urgent care practice.
Yes.
And all of that was done by Thursday. And on Friday, you host Destiny Moments with Dr. K on Spiritually Connect. You're a co-host, guest co-host with Marcus Mercado with Marriage Beyond the Vows. And then you wrote books on Saturday before you went to the sacred desk on Sunday. And so My Way, God's Way, or The Highway, that's one book. More Than Preaching, another book. The Seasons of Love compilation book. And then you're working on another book dealing with breaking free from mental health. And you're also brought in as a writer for Mental Health in Covenant Marriage magazine. It's safe to say you know what you're talking about. You've seen some things, you've studied a lot more, and have utilized all of that gift to make our world better.
Yeah.
So the first thing is, where are we right now? I mean, you see the world in the chaos. And yes, it's easy to just blame it on one individual or one political party, but it's so much deeper than that. And even when we look at social media, so many people have topical conversations. We're really not digging deep into the psyche of what's happening and what I would call the systemic breakup. This is deliberate and intentional of ensuring that even the households deal with the trauma of political jousting, the trauma of this partisanship that exists on top of everything else we're dealing with in the community. Where do we stand and how do we get through all of this season?
Well, first of all, you said a key point and you talked about the trauma. So one of the things that I always say is that everybody, every person, every living being is a product of their past.
Yeah.
They are a product of what they came through, came up in, whether it's socially, economically, spiritually, or whatever the case may be. So when we are dealing with adults, or we're looking at it from an adult lens, most of what we're dealing with as adults is childhood trauma that was untreated, undiagnosed. They didn't identify it, and so it wasn't treated. And I grew up in the 70s, so back in the 70s and before, we didn't really talk about all of this stuff, you know, in the church, in our homes, in our families, in the schools, or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So a lot of it is lacking the education. And what happens is, you know, one of the things that I believe I've been commissioned to do is to just get the information out there through education. The Bible tells us for a lack of knowledge, people perish.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons we're seeing so much violence, one of the reasons we're seeing so many poor decision making, one of the reasons we're seeing, you know, children are literally afraid to go to school, is because of untreated trauma and just the outbreak of mental illness that we refuse to get the assistance for, or we're embarrassed, or we're afraid of the stigma that may be attached.
I agree. I agree. And so that stigma that comes with help, do you see that slowly beginning to change? And I know that a lot of churches are now, it used to be in growing up, I'll tell on myself, growing up in my generation, you know, the pastor was called to kind of do everything.
Right.
Pastor was the chief administrator of the church. You know, he was the custodian on call if need be. But then as it related to mental health or some of the issues of the day, the pastor was the go-to individual. And that didn't necessarily mean, that they went to school to actually, you know, to have those licenses and some of those things. They truly relied on the book and their calling. Now we see a lot of churches saying, it's important that we get licensed counselors in the body as well as having our ministerial staff empowered as well. And that's a great thing. And has that begun at least to kind of break down the walls and the barriers of that psyche?
Absolutely. I believe that it definitely has. One of the things that, you know, I've been doing is going around to different ministries and just talking about, you know, the mental health and how it impacts the communities, the churches, schools, et cetera.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I often tell pastors is, you know, the days where you have to be the end all to it all is over.
Yeah.
And if you don't know, because a lot of the people that we pastor are traumatized. And I actually advise the pastor that if they're not skilled, that they need to get somebody that's skilled, or they need to know somebody that's skilled, because if they open up that trauma box,
mm-hmm.
they open up a lot more than what they want to handle. And so I definitely believe that because it's getting out there more and people are being more exposed, we are breaking down the walls of the stigma. We are breaking down the barriers. And, you know, I'm prayerful and confident that in the years to come, that not that mental illness won't exist, but people will not be so apprehensive about receiving treatment.
I think it's absolutely important, and it's great to see our leaders well equipped, such as yourself, to be able to kind of handle these issues. Because I think with everything that we're facing, sometimes we just need to sit down somewhere and have a conversation. And there's so much healing that comes from that conversation. We used to do some of that healing naturally at the dinner table, you know, with our families, but with the, you know, that strategic breakup of our families, you know, many are left to kind of fend for themselves, and hide this stuff from the world. And so I'm really excited about the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much. You've
dedicated your life, to this, not only as an author, but, a trendsetter and an expert on many different facets of this. Tell the listening audience where they can worship and fellowship with you and the ministry.
Sure. The name of my church is Destiny Christian Worship Center, and we are located at 6401 Market Street, right underneath the L. So we're one block from 63rd and Market in Millbourne. And the treatment center is in the same building, 6401 Market Street, and that is a mental health urgent care center. So the difference between my practice and another practice is that someone can call right now and say they need therapy, and they can either get in tonight or tomorrow. to get me right away.
So guys, you can make the appointment today and be seen, if not later today, definitely tomorrow. This is this is a matter of expediency for many of us, specifically when we talk about communities. And Teresa, you and I know this, individuals that are dealing with incarcerated families and they're dealing with the trauma of that. And we see a lot of times even these prayer vigils,
right.
The prayer vigils that happen when individuals are shot. It is just of my opinion that we need, you know, the teddy bears and stuff are great, and I think they're absolutely important, however you express yourself. But I think it's important that we have some counselors on the scene.
Right.
You know, individuals have experienced some serious situations in their lives and need to have a conversation, specifically, in my opinion, with a spiritual leader. And so we're appreciative and thankful that God has charged you and given you the tools to operate in the kingdom in this way. And we're going to make sure that we continue to be a home for you and continue to support and uplift you as you need.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate that.
So, guys, Dr. Everett knows. So make sure you head down to the Destiny Christian Worship Center. If you're in the footprint of Philadelphia, I promise you it will be an amazing experience with an amazing leader of God. We pray God's continued blessings on your life, Dr. Everett.
Thank you so much, and I pray for you and all that you're doing as well.
Thank you. We receive all of that. So you heard from Dr. Everett. She's an amazing leader in our community, and I encourage everyone to kind of have that conversation around mental health. Again, I don't think that this is by coincidence that God has allowed us to talk in a very serious way around mental health. There have been more than enough guests that have come on our show to talk about mental health, and I think it's important that all of us begin to discuss mental health
and what are those steps are
and what it is, you know? and there's nothing wrong with saying I'm in pain and I need to have a conversation,
right?
And especially for men, because from an egotistical perspective, you know, we get attacked all day long and we don't want to say when we're hurt, right? But there needs to be a conversation. So I'm glad that individuals like Dr. Kia Everett are in position. So there's much to talk about on the show, but I want to do this really quickly, because everybody's kind of wondering, you know, what does he have to say? Because we posted a graphic that said owning it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, even Teresa, she saw the show notes and hit me with the question mark.
I'm
like,
still waiting on a response with the emoji.
Yeah, look, hurry up and wait. You will get the answer. And so I want to talk about that, but I want to talk very frankly with the listening audience in a very real way. You know, immigration, my God, it's a myriad of issues that we're dealing with at a national level that have broken our communication chain, right? We used to be able to have conversation in a very respectful way, even if we felt some kind of way about it. We at least acknowledged each other's differences. Now, those differences have created rifts in the home, you know, friends, you know, definitely on racial lines. I mean, this thing has gotten beyond ugly at this point. And so if you're black and you have a thought process that's a little different than the Democratic machine's messaging, then you are a coon. That's what's being said, and which I think is the stupidest thing in the world. Because the thought leaders of the world often went against the grain to provide just a different train of thought. Didn't necessarily mean that you had to agree with everything, but they gave you something to think about. And definitely on the R side as well, every individual who doesn't believe what they think, and you know, that could vary based on different groups. I know we like to put party groups in one bucket. Dems all think like this and Republicans all think like that. I think that is one of the biggest disservices to politics, mm-hmm, and to human intellect I mean, just because I have a party registration does not necessarily mean that I'm going to agree with everything that occurs. I mean, we live in our family, in our family households. We don't agree with everything that happens, right? So I'm confused when we say all Dems think like this and all Republicans think like this and all, you know, Green Party thinks like that. It's gone too far.
And that's why we have the new wave of democratic socialism, you know, actually just to
even that, right? So,
yeah.
and which is a whole nother element because, you know, we live in a capitalist society. And so, you know, we still haven't figured out that part, right? And then here comes a new train of thought, which has some merit inside the party. It has gained. You know, we saw the Bernie Sanders side, you know, make waves. And then now there's an undercurrent of that, right? New young people who are saying, look, this is how we see the world. And we're not going to apologize for how we do that. But I want to get to some facts because I want everybody to really understand. And I know many don't like it. Over this last week, I posted some facts and I even had brothers who would give me dap any other day, go, you know, I'm going to leave you to your own devices. You know, everybody's getting intellectually, I would say intellectually ignorant in this aspect.
Interesting.
It's important that we deal with the facts, right? Yes, the facts are that we have a president that is being advised in some very unique ways. In 1600. Yes, we understand that. And in some cases, it's reported that there is no advice coming and there's a move being made. Here are the facts. All Republicans don't think alike. Need you to understand that, right? So if someone could be registered Republican and still not agree with what occurred. In fact, everybody, I saw the new memes going out where people were going, well, you know, where are the Republicans now? Now that Trump has, you know, said the U.S. basically doesn't know what it's talking about. If you look at some of the media reports and you truly open your eyes there, the reports were coming out very early saying more Republicans than Democrats were coming out condemning the president for,
right,
against Russia. But everybody missed that because it was just too easy to send the meme around social media. On the other side, all Democrats do not think alike. All Democrats are not, you know, trying to make the world ultra liberal and just free flowing. That is not, the premise and the precept that all individuals espouse to. There are many factions of the Democratic Party just as they are of the Republican Party. Why? Because you don't just sign up for a party and then just start thinking along one particular train of thought. Mm-hmm. Everyone has different views and different opinions. And they form subgroups within those parties. Those are facts. Now let's deal with, this is a touchy subject, but I want to deal with this. We talk about immigration as if the immigration issue just began in 2016 and Trump decided immediately that he's going to build some cages, which he can't do. It would have to be a contractor and it would have to go through federal funding, which means Congress and Senate would have to see the money and approve the money that would go to building the cages. I want you guys to understand this, right? So Trump didn't write the check. Even if he agrees with separation of the children, which apparently he has said that he does not, right? So I'm only going with what he said. Here's what we got to understand. And I'm going to pull this from Time Magazine because whenever we talk about Washington Post, somebody says, oh, well, it's a liberal thing. When we talk about New York Times, someone says, oh, it's a conservative thing and vice versa, right? So now I'm going to go with Time Magazine. Can we go with Time as a balanced publication? And this was really deep. The article says, and this is the title, Detaining Immigrant Kids is Now a $1 billion Industry.
Overnight?
No, because it doesn't happen overnight,
I know it doesn't,
right?
But
I'm glad you gave me that prompt. So I'm going to just read this for you so that we can begin to have this dialogue. Detaining immigrant children, this is the first paragraph, have morphed into a surging industry in the U.S. that now reaps $1 billion annually. Here's the thing. I need you to grasp this. A tenfold increase over the past decade. That came from Associated Press. Now, Health and Human Services grants for shelters, foster care, and other child welfare services, peep this, for detained, unaccompanied, and separated children soared from $74 million in 2007 to $958 million in 2017. What am I telling you? Actually, I'm not telling you anything. I'm just reading. In 2007, we were spending $74 million on detained, unaccompanied, and separated children, which meant...
It was happening before the press.
My God, did you just finish? Look at the spirit flowing
I don't know.
In the studio today, right?
I mean, I hear where you're coming from. So for the last 10 years, there has been a major increase, right? So this did not happen overnight, but I think it is now being highlighted.
And?
Okay.
It started in 2007, right? So Republicans don't start screaming this whole Obama thing, right? Because that's not where I'm going with this. I'm just saying America as a country. Mm-hmm. Has chosen to increase the funding for this because we have been doing said thing for years.
For a decade.
These are the facts, right? So here are the states: Arizona, California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Texas, Virginia, and Washington are all states in which these nearly 90 facilities are held.
Which means the representatives from these states had to vote for it.
Come on, somebody. And even if you didn't vote for it, you at least knew that it was present, right? And so, yes, we should have outrage that any child is placed in a cage with an aluminum or metal blanket, whatever. I don't want any child in any kind of situation like that.
Right.
And it's very clear, and I need Republicans to get off of this. Every individual trying to cross the border is not a criminal. Let's stop the madness. The stupid. Okay. These individuals, in many cases, are leaving some challenging scenarios just trying to figure out their way to safety. Because we say, give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free, right? We say all of that and then turn around and do the total opposite, right? And I understand because for African Americans, we're trying to ensure that we have our piece of the pie because it's really only been 50 years since we were getting hit over the head. With clubs.
I don't need to talk about that.
It's only been 50 years, right?
Everybody else seems to get what they want and my God. Less.
So, I mean, so we're still traumatized with what occurred. You know, and then here comes a priority. You don't know what else to do with it, right?
Yeah.
It's only been 50 years. But then on top of that, here comes, you know, a group of individuals that are seeking safety. Blacks are inside the country seeking safety, right? Everybody's having this priority around safety, and it so seems, even right now, that immigration is going to trump what's happening in the inner cities for African Americans yet again. In fact, it has, to be very frank. And so there's all kinds of energy that exists, but the facts are, and this is for the Dems that, you know, nothing can be said about our beloved President Obama. The truth is, both administrations, and then the previous one before that, because it started in 2007. Mm-hmm. So all that lame duck presidency conversation, scrap it. So Bush, Obama, and Trump all oversaw what we're dealing with right now. Mm-hmm. Now, that does not excuse current behavior. So I don't want anybody going, oh, my God, there's an attack. No, it doesn't excuse current behavior. But I want us to understand the culture, because we can keep scratching, you know, the raised bump on our arm, or we can also figure out what that bump came from, right? And then work on healing the bump. Because we can scratch it into oblivion, and all we're going to end up with is a blister.
Well, I think right now we're scratching the surface. And so as we've seen, you know, now three administrations, and it just happened to land in Trump's administration, where the surface is finally revealed, I think now is the time where we start addressing that and actually finding solutions for it. But again, let's not forget that we need to still deal with the issues with law enforcement in this criminal justice reform that I feel like has been put underneath the carpet. So because of this immigration situation. But again, as I said before, we need to take care at home. Let's see what we're doing locally. But let's also review some of those past policies and start understanding how they affect our current future and some of those layouts right now.
So, I agree. And so now let me dig a little deeper to help you guys understand how the chess moves are made, because right now we're playing checkers when we respond in a knee-jerk reaction to some of this stuff. And the immigration issue, I believe, will be dealt with appropriately. But in the midst of that, while they threw that up in the air, right, and everybody paid attention, sleight of hand occurred where, and this is Reuters as early as July 16th, reporting that the U.S. Treasury moved to protect the identities of dark money political donors, right? So, and here's what's interesting about that term. There are some reports, CNN, now Reuters actually did it correctly. The U.S. Treasury moves to protect identities of dark money political donors. That's Reuters, which I give them full respect for properly giving a balanced title. CNN, on the other hand, decided to say, well, the NRA successfully has achieved their ability to hide their donors.
Well, did they? Well, they were just one entity out of the whole.
One entity out of a slew.
But it's still a fact.
So why didn't they say NAACP? Because NAACP was a part of that article, buried in the bottom, as one of the groups.
Because we're now in gun control.
Here we go. PR spin.
So we're now in gun control.
You just proved my point, right? So
we need to sell these columns.
I need y'all to understand, media is trying to prod you guys into having these partisan bickered dialogues that get us nowhere as a people. I need you to understand that. That's what's occurring. And they're being very deliberate about how they title things. And you need to even look at that, even in your respective cities, you know, Atlanta and Phoenix, who are tuning in, and Chicago, who's tuning in, and everybody else who's listening. And look at how your local papers are also, describing these kind of conversations. So I brought all that up to say, We're in a political quagmire. Like, it's, if we're not careful as black folk, we're going to bicker ourselves into another missed opportunity in the end of 18, 19, and 20s presidential election to be able to make a difference and to put a true agenda on the table for our people. It's amazing to me. This is my personal opinion. It's amazing to me that African Americans can sit and bicker about whether it be immigration issues, you know, Trump versus Hillary, you know, he's the orange guy. She's the hot sauce in the purse woman. I mean, my God, we didn't get anything from either yet. We didn't get anything. Like we got to be honest, right? So it's not like we haven't.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, collectively, we have not seen fruits of our labor, right? So you can scream Democrat all you want, but I encourage you to go outside and look at your community and then tell me what works. Look at your city and tell me what's working. And that does not mean that work is not getting done. So I'm not blanketing one thing. You can look at from the Republican side, go out to your community and see, is work really being done? And if it is not, And if there are still opportunities, then that means we should probably still keep having conversation with each other about what needs to be done and who's best to get that done, because all politics are local. So we can talk about CNN and Reuters and Fox all day, but what's happening at home is going to make the difference.
Absolutely.
And that's just really what it boils down to. But if we allow the enmity that has been manufactured to grow between each other, we're going to get nowhere. We're going to destroy our friendships. It's already crazy. We're arguing in barbershops and salons and
social media
is ridiculous right now, right? And we still have a per capita income in family, the median income in family in terms of wealth, almost less than $6,000 per each black family. What are we arguing about?
I think we're arguing about the things we don't understand. So
why are we arguing about it? If I don't understand it, it would behoove me to do some research and understand. And that's not occurring. And it's something that we need to do now. We need to have some real conversation. Now, I apologize. So, Brett, I need some apology music. Play some apology music. All right. Yeah, bring it down. Y'all about to mess it up. Y'all about to mess up my apology.
I don't know if I want a two-step.
Do not two-step on my apology. Please. All right, bring it down, Brett, for Teresa starts dancing. Bring it down. So I apologize, and I need to have a real conversation with you guys, because we've been having real dialogue in between in our communities about, well, this person is a good leader, and we need to elect politicians that are good leaders. You've heard that before, right? You know, we need good leaders, and you know, I need a good politician. I'm tired of all these bad politicians. What is a good politician and a bad politician?
Oh, me.
Teresa?
Okay. What is a good politician? A good politician is someone who listens to the community, someone who not only takes what they say, but actually curates an agenda and a legislative agenda that can beautify an area and also create change. A bad politician, and again, there's more points, but I'm just going to do 2 to 3.
Go ahead.
A bad politician is one who has self-interest, one who only thinks of oneself, is very selfish,
mm-hmm.
which means every decision that they make, they're making it on behalf of themselves or their company or to better their family, but more so not the community of who elected them in there. So
you've heard that that definition of good politician, bad politician. I'm going to break this down for you guys so you understand. Okay. A good politician is good at the following: getting elected, getting reelected, and pushing an agenda.
Oh, that politician.
The end.
Okay.
There's only one politician.
So
a bad politician doesn't exist. You know why a bad politician doesn't exist, guys? Because bad politicians, the system ejects them out. If you can't get elected or reelected or push your agenda, you get kicked out of the system. Okay? A good leader embodies some of the traits that you talked about, right? So they care about the people. They're putting people first. They're ready to go to war for their people. They're committed, you know, that their people get the spoils of war, right? So they go and accomplish and bring it back home. They make sacrifices for their people. It's very difficult in a system of getting elected, reelected, and pushing an agenda for good leaders to survive. You know why? Because corporate interests, special interests, special PACs, dark money, whatever you want to call it, forces the politician side of you to become a priority and further push back the good leadership. You can have great characteristics, but those are often shunned because they want you to be a better politician. And how do you know that? Because, and I'm sure some of you guys have seen or experience where you see a guy that you or a female that you have elected, male or female, you've elected them. They get in office and then they change. You can't get them to connect with the community anymore in real meaningful ways. They send their representatives, right, rather than them. And they're, I mean, they're local, right? So they're not in Harrisburg in the budget, you know. They're not at the state level, the federal level. They are home. They will give you money for the block party, but not necessarily focus on building your block in a very meaningful way. That those things, the reason why that happens is because they have to get reelected. And so being elected becomes the premise. And because we don't put money into the election, because we don't put money into campaigns, because we think our vote matters, which I think is the most misdirected thing in African American community, for us to just say, just register to vote and vote for because your ancestors died. That's only one part of it. You got to put money behind your vote, or else your vote put someone in, you really put them in harm's way. You elect a good leader and then get them tarnished, and you destroy them because you put them into the shark tank with no protective cape. That protective cage is that money. That's our guy. We're protecting him. We're going to make sure that legislation gets done. That's our elected woman. We're going to make sure that she's taken care of regardless. She's covered. We don't need your oil money. We don't need your fracking money. We don't need this, whatever it is, because that's our people. That's why we have the issues that we have. That's why people can't stand up and do what they need to do, because good leaders, it's hard for a good leader to be a good politician without the full commitment of the people. We get good leaders, they become bad politicians. And then we make a concession for that. We then go say, well, you know what? You keep it real, so you won't make a good elected official. Are you kidding me?
So you're saying you got to go through the politics, literally playing chess in order to be a I agree.
You come with that bread and you move your agenda, period.
Influence, yeah.
Listen, I mean, let's go back to the Dave Richardson. For those who are not in the Philadelphia area, the Dave Richardson School was, I'm coming up to Harrisburg with the dashiki on. We shutting down the Senate floor until we get this done, or to this House floor until we get it done, period. Mm-hmm. And there's no amount of money that you can give me that's going to change what I'm going to do for my people today in this session. So we ain't going to filibuster and none of the other nonsense. Right? But you can't, it's hard for us to get those kind of leaders without us supporting them in that way. So this whole conversation of good politician, bad politician, we've got to stop that, because we really don't want politicians. We want good leaders. We want good leaders. In fact, we weren't even calling them politicians less than 5 years ago. We were calling them elected officials. And before elected officials, we were calling them public servants. So now we're so stuck and hung up on this whole, you know, politician thing, which is crazy. We want good leaders. Those who will be committed, and we will be committed to them.
I like that for an institute. So I just came from a leadership summit in New York. And I think, for me, their description is what I just gave you in terms of what is a good politician, a bad politician, and what that looks like. So I'm excited to see what an actual good leader looks at. Like, I would love to see an institute or some type of instructional training that actually talks about that.
We're gonna
get
that
how done. They prepare people to stay good leaders versus being. How do you, you know, we're not having those type of conversations.
We're
going
to get that done, because we do all these workshops for the elected official or the aspiring elected official. But what's missing from that is the component that prepares the community to take care of that elected official.
I love it.
Right. So, yeah. So it's great that you got a Carson Wentz out on the field, but he needs pads.
Right. Who's going to support him?
He needs an offensive line, right? Yeah. He needs things around him so that he can do what he needs to do. And more importantly, he needs some receivers to throw to. So it's a bigger picture than just throwing it on the elected official and wondering why they went into Where's Waldo status, right? But here's why I apologize. And this is to black women. I need you to understand. I'm sorry. And here's what I'm sorry for. During my tenure, and some will say, you know, before I joined the dark side and became a Republican, during my tenure as the president of the Philadelphia Young Democrats, our board, and I give credit to Steph and Yves Carmon Peruse, who really, they set the stage, and I gotta be very frank with you. And when they tapped me to, and began to develop me for leadership, they were very intentional about ensuring that minorities had a seat at the table in the Democratic Party, in specifically for millennials, before millennials became a cool phrase. And I became president of the Young Dems, and it was passed down to me from Mike Ellis, great, great man out of the northwest side of Philadelphia. And our board was diverse, but it was chock full of women. Young women who were committed, young women who were ultra talented. And they were effective in their execution. We did everything from working with Secret Service on events, like Temple University when the president came to Temple, Michelle Obama at Houston Hall, Dan Honorato and the governor at the time. And we did some really great work. 3,000 plus young people were engaged, were moving, were registering people to vote. And in many ways, we did it for peanuts, right? Because, and I'm gonna keep it funky, war leaders got checks. The party gave the young people t-shirts and old Dunkin' Donuts and coffee. And the young people still did the work because they cared, their hearts were pure, and they wanted to get things done. Here's where I apologize. The women did the work. And men were involved too. But the women were prepared to do the work. And I should have never, now looking back and seeing what's happening to our black women politically, I should have never allowed politics to get in the way of ensuring that the presidency of the Philadelphia Young Dems went to anyone else other than a minority woman. I allowed it to go, and I supported when I started getting those phone calls. You need to lean it over here. You need to support this person. I didn't even actually really like the person, but I did it because that was what was asked. My hunches were right, because what occurred was a stale nature of progress that happened with the organization. And that person went on to do some other things with other entities. I firmly believe that if there were multiple minority women that were prepared to lead and should have been leading. And I apologize for overlooking you. Why do I do that right now? Because I can see now, hindsight is always 20/20. I can see now how parties have played the black woman. The black woman moves the black community. Let me be very clear. Black men get a chance to stand on it and make some moves, and we shout some things. But black women keep this community afloat. They keep it going. When we talk about the hood, yeah, black men can stand out there and do the rally and the press conference about anti-violence, but it's always the woman on the street that's going, put that down. You know, you don't need to do that. And it doesn't demean men, but I'm just saying this is what's occurring here. And politically, specifically in the city of Philadelphia, we needed a minority black woman in charge of the Philadelphia Young Democrats so that the perspective of the black woman would be present throughout all of the tenure of President Obama. Whether or not he moved on it or not would have been, we don't know. That's theory. But I do know that a black woman would have ensured that we were ahead of the curve, at least in Philadelphia. So when we talk about the lethargic nature of our voting bloc and some of those things, it's because of those maligned moves, and I'm a part of it and I own it. What do we do with it now? I believe that it is essential. If African Americans are going to move forward, that we move forward with our black women in the lead. I know that's going to piss off a lot of black men. But it's time that black men come to the black women's organization, right, in the minority women organizations, and we go, what's your plan? Right? Because we've been forcing ours down their throat and asking them to come to our meetings and prove themselves, right? Maybe we need to shift that up a little bit, go to their meeting with a crew and say, listen, we support y'all. We're not here to crash the meeting. We're here to support what y'all are doing in the meeting. Because we also have a lot of soft, backboned folk that allow our city to be what it is. And I just got to be real. And I just came from a race where a qualified black woman should have been elected. When individuals were screaming, we need black women who are qualified to be in office, who can, you know, handle this, handle that, handle the third. We get one. And I mean, without telling the tapes, it became Vaseline backs. Like, nobody wanted to stand up. But you declare in the barbershop why it's important we need to support black leadership. Why we need to break the chain and do something different. Why we need a black woman mayor. Why we need, you know, a black woman in Congress. And then we get those opportunities and we hate on it, quite frankly. No, that's my guy. How's that your guy? Your guy didn't take care of the community. That's how she got 35% of the vote, because the guy didn't take care of the community, right? Like, they don't know him. They don't know her. And we have an opportunity to put our people in place and we play it different. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to be a part of that anymore. And I apologize for my part in creating the kind of scenarios that have allowed black women to become the test dummies for half of the nonsense that, quite frankly, men, and I'm not putting on black men, but men, period, have allowed it to be. And then we see even now the DNC is doing this whole thing with, you know, a seat at the table for black women, which is the craziest thing in the world, because we already had a seat at the table. Then we let y'all have Mary J. Blige to sit down and sing to Hillary, and Teresa and I laugh about this all the time. You know, is it a gun? Is it a knife? And she's sitting there singing like to Hillary, like they're buddies.
Like she wish she had one of those.
Yeah,
objects.
Come on. And then they're going to tell you, we're going to go around the country and listen to you again, as if they didn't hear from you the last time. As if when they asked y'all to come support Doug Jones that you didn't, right? And all these other races that they asked you to save across the country, like when you didn't hear them the first time and they didn't hear you. They heard you, but now they can replay it again. As if, you know what? No, we need to revisit it because we need to get notes now. No, send them a letter. Black women are running this thing for black folk this time. And it's important that black men, that we sit down with black women that we know that are moving organizations, that are getting some things together, and we say, what do you need from us? Real simple. And I'm going to do my part. It's not about, I'm going to help you unless I get if I get a favor from you, right? It's not about you're a good person, but you got to wait your turn. And you know what? You can come work under me as vice president of. We got to stop that. If the person is qualified and they're a woman, put them in play and give them the same things that you would give your golfing buddy if he was in play. And maybe that might be the problem. Because you're treating them like the golfing buddy. Maybe we need to just give them the respect and say, you can lead and we're going to get out of your way and we're going to support you. There's no reason for there not to be a black female in a position of mayor in the city of Philadelphia. There's no reason. Or a minority woman, period. There's no reason why we don't have a minority woman in Congress in PA, period. Those things need to happen. And for the black race across the country, understand Republicans and Democrats both want the black woman. Why? Because they know that the black woman will organize. They're not even paying attention to half of the memes and stuff that are going on. In fact, they're doing more investigation than they do on the guy that's cheating on their politics. I mean, they'll tell you in a heartbeat. PoliticsUSUSA.com is a Snoop's verified false site. Stop posting it. Like, they will do that kind of research. Meanwhile, I'm sorry, fellas, we like to argue about the false news article and don't even pay attention to the source of the information from which it comes. It's time to do something different. And I owned that I played my part in pushing black women to the back. And that's because black men, quite frankly, you know, we're under so much attack. By the time we get to the table, we're just like, look, I'm happy to be here. What's the program? You know, and I'm going to make some difference, but I also don't want the hate. So what does it take for me to be cool and sit in here and get what I need, you know, for my section of the community? But in order for us to have the Dave Richardson like leadership, in order for us to have, you know, the Shirley Chisholm like leadership, it's going to require us putting the most qualified, the most effective groups in play at the right times. Right now for us, it's our black women.
And to help the young Dems out a little bit. Mm-hmm. They have made some changes. So, you know, current president is a Latino.
Mm-hmm. Which male, I think is
absolutely
a great thing.
Fully qualified, yep. Has been leading constituent services for the office that he, and writing legislative policy, mm-hmm. for, you know, those in those areas of the city. And we do have a African-American woman who is a vice president, you know, who also
and I need her to be president. Like, I'm putting it out there. Like, don't do the vice president. You know you're next up, but then we make a move at the end of the term.
We also think it's about where that person is, right? So
I think that person wants to be president.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. So okay. I'm saying if that person does not want to be president, make it because she chose not to, mm-hmm. not because politics got in play. And we need to support that now. We need to groom her now and get behind her now so that she can be effective. And not with the play money that they give young Dems and young R's, mm-hmm. but real money. Because they're doing the real work.
Well, I would like to
see. They're doing the work.
Yeah. I think right now they are starting to do more work. So.
Well, there's more things to be done.
Correct.
There's more things to be done. But I appreciate it. And so I'm sorry. And I will do. And I have been doing, mm-hmm. but I will continue to do my part in making sure that our black women are in play. And I encourage all black men and minority men, make a phone call today to, you know, a minority woman who's doing some great stuff. And I'm not trying to tell you take her out to 19 and give her some drinks. Come on. We got to cut that out too, right? We can work with someone without being personal with someone. Let's get to them and say, I just want to call because I see you making moves and I just want to know, how do we help? I have an organization here. I have some brothers here. I have some resources here. How do we support your organization? No, we're not trying to take it over. We just want to support it. I guarantee you it's going to go a long way and I'm going to do my part here at Heart of the City. So
I'll do my part too.
But
you know,
I'm the guy. Yeah. This is a guy thing right
well,
now.
I'll do my part.
I need you to do your part to keep
other
rocking.
Women. Okay?
Yeah, I got it. Right. I got it. So I'm going to go right to, you know, and I'm before I could do this, I'm willing to keep having this conversation. So by all means, I know I'm getting tons of texts, and I will continue having this dialogue with anybody, and support the men who are actually making some moves right now, and doing some things to make sure that our women are in play and can make a move. So let me get right to Brother Kevin Dua. Now he's been on multiple times. I'm excited about him, Teacher of the Year, in Massachusetts. I mean, his awards, the list goes on. Massachusetts Council for Social Studies, the Don Salvucci Award for, excellence in promoting civil education, Wakefield Human Rights Commission, Dr. Martin Luther King Service Award, the Kathleen Roberts Creative Leadership Award. I mean, the list goes on. AmeriCorps, Boston Ed Talks, Guinness World Book of Records, USA Today, Boston Globe, NPR, PBS NewsHour, Teaching Tolerance, and I'm going to inject this, Heart of the City, as well, are just some of the platforms that his social justice projects have been recognized by. This brother is on the move, and I believe he is, you know, he is a blueprint by which black men, and there are others out there too. But he is one of the highlighted blueprints of what excellence looks like from black men in education. So I'm really excited to have him back on the Heart of the City. Kev, are you out there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hey,
good afternoon, Malik.
Man, good afternoon to you, brother. I know you are rocking and rolling. I appreciate you staying with us on this. So you've been doing some amazing projects, and I appreciate the ones that you've brought to us in the previous interview. But now you have another film that a student produced, 14-minute film, called Reclaiming, the Lloyd Gaines documentary. Tell us about this amazing project that you've done with your students.
Yes. Well, I guess to try to put in context, and a major prop to the incredible effort of young scholars being able to take on a task that many people like to describe it as the coldest cold case of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story that most likely the majority of individuals in our country may not know about regardless of their background.
Yeah.
And so the context wise for all listeners is this. In the 1930s, a young African-American man by the name of Lloyd Gaines wanted to pursue his education at a law school. So he applied to the University of Missouri. He was denied admissions due to being black. So for him, he worked with the NAACP to try to challenge this decision. And his case went all the way to the Supreme Court. And when you share that part with individuals, many people love to assume that he lost. There's
yeah.
no way that an African-American in the 1930s who wants to try to desegregate a school and join with other whites, there's no way he's going to win. This is where the first surprise comes in. He actually won his case.
Mm-hmm.
And what makes it even more fascinating is that after he won his case, which instructed the state to create a new law school for black individuals, the NAACP felt that they wanted to continue this progress to bring upon desegregation at the law school. Now, what makes the story continue as is intriguing and in many ways sad, mysterious story is that while Gaines was waiting for the next steps for this new case, he was staying with his friend at a fraternity house, Alpha Phi Alpha, and he disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
March 1939, he disappeared without a trace.
Yep.
And his disappearance forced the NAACP lawyers to drop the case. And though he has been missing for 79 years as of right now, that case back in the 1930s created the template.
Mm-hmm.
For the NAACP, along with, as many individuals know, Thurgood Marshall.
Right, right.
To push forward and win the landmark victory decision with Brown v. Board of Education.
It's actually inside of that case as well.
Yeah.
It's noted, yep.
Yeah. And for my students, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, from all different backgrounds, they all know about Brown v. Board, but not about Lloyd Gaines. And for them, the task was this, with the emphasis about what is real, what is fake news.
Yeah.
The American identity, black voices, empowerment, systemic oppression, education. How do you bring light to this story that essentially changed America that so many people do not know?
Mm-hmm.
And this project became more than just a history lesson. It became more than just a grade. It was young individuals wanting to pay tribute and respect to a man who should have never been put in this situation, because he should have never been denied an education in the first place, and to try to, especially work in this current climate, try to, and this may sound lofty what I'm about to say, but actually try to convince federal agencies such as the FBI to open this case.
Yeah. Yeah, and the case, and I want everybody to understand, we normally do the Black History Fact every week. This is the Black History Fact. And we're going to make sure that we also post, the Lloyd Gaines story on the Facebook page. I need you guys to check it out, but, it's really important because even now, University of Missouri, they renamed their culture center. They have the Gaines Oldham Black Culture Center after him. And actually MU, the School of Law, awarded Gaines, you know, finally an honorary degree, as late as 2006. It's great that they did it, but it's clear that they were late on the draw as it relates to this very historical, case. And the truth is we still do not know what occurred, to Lloyd Gaines. Is that correct?
Yes. We, to this day, we do not know. Next March will mark, 8 decades since this man has been missing. He would be or could be 108 years old.
Yeah.
And with this 14-minute film that my students made, they connected with historians. They connected with professors. They went through various databases. They looked through as many evidence as possible to create, I would say, this proposal in trying to emphasize the importance of this man's story, and in many ways, the story of Black Americans, and it's a project that I, without question, and extremely proud of high schoolers being able to support each other, being able to critically analyze, and it does provide a situation for us as Americans to truly analyze right now in the country. We have various resources that are dedicated in trying to preserve the legacy, the history of Black America.
Yeah.
Whether it's through the whether it's through the, I want to make sure it's a long title and I want to get the name correct. Whether it's the National Museum of African American History and Culture in D.C., the recently open National Memorial for Peace and Justice focused on the countless lives lost through lynching, or even as of last week, the announcement that the Department of Justice has reopened based off new information.
Yeah, the Emmett Till case.
The Emmett Till case.
Yep.
And how this is connected to Gaines, or how it can be, is that with Gaines, a few years ago, also supported by Congressman John Lewis, they launched the Emmett Till
Unsolved Initiatives Act, which opened old civil rights cases to investigate. And what makes Gaines' case interesting is that it does not fit the criteria of the initiative, and it has been denied a few times by the FBI. And what makes it frustrating, especially for individuals who want justice for whatever happened to Gaines, is that because a missing report was never filed, because an investigation was never launched, technically this does not count as
a missing person, right? A homicide,
or as a missing person, or even a cold case.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't fit into those parameters, you can't even call Gaines' story a case.
Mm-hmm. But we all know that it is, and
it is.
And it's very clear. And so I'm gonna give you something, because you know we have the Discovery Channel, we got A&E and all that kind of stuff, right? But we also have Kevin's Class, because Kevin's Class has produced documentaries that are impactful, that are significantly important as it relates to our community. And I'm looking forward to more of those Kevin's Class documentaries. How can we actually watch it? Is it possible? Is it on YouTube? Where is it?
Yes, it is on YouTube. It is called Reclaiming Lloyd L. Gaines. His middle name was Lionel. And it's a great showcase of students investigating the story, connecting different ideas to try to do their part as active citizens in trying to preserve this. And I think one of the greatest lessons that my students we're able to come together on our own is that it was unfortunate for them to see this student, this American student, this human being, never get a chance to go to class based off his efforts. But what was even more disheartening for my student to see is that he was put in this situation in the first place.
Yeah.
And I think for minorities, for people of color, for the African American race in this country, I think too often we instill in each other, as much as I adore and respect the first lady that I was grateful in electing along with her husband, Michelle Obama's line, "When they go low, we go high."
Right.
And we instill that in terms of progress and so forth. But in many ways, we also do forget to acknowledge and hold accountable why individuals and forces went low in the first place.
And I think that is one of the most critical, components and things that we need to move forward in addressing. And that's one of the things we talk about on the show all the time. It's not just the symptoms, but find out the source that created the symptom and how we deal with that. And so listen, Kevin, we celebrate you, man, and celebrate the class and the group of students that are coming through you as a vehicle. You guys are doing some amazing things. We're going to make sure that the listening audience also goes to the YouTube, checks it out, and we're going to spread this thing around as well, because I think it's important not only that students are talking about history, but doing audio and video production and the whole nine all right inside of history class. And we celebrate you for leading that effort.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your listeners, for being able to just take some time to hear this beautiful legacy of this individual that is still or has been missing. And it is always a hope that such stories as this is heard and spread and analyzed to figure out what are the next steps to make sure that no human ever goes through this.
You're absolutely right. Kev, thank you so much for calling in, man, and we look forward to our next conversation with you.
Of course. Thank you so much. Take care, everyone, and be safe.
So I have Greg Thorne and the legend D. Lee in the studio. Now, Kevin already did our Black History Fact. We're going to make sure that Lance posts that on the social media page. It's important that we share that with our children, talk about these stories, because we have to control our communication and our culture and our heritage, and some of the great stories that have gone under the table. I'm going to go right to the song of the week. We're only going to play a little bit of this because I got a legend. I got two legends in the building. So we're going to talk about everything from entertainment, to God, to Philly history. We're going to go through it all. The song of the week. You'll love this one. The new one from Childish Gambino, Summertime Magic. Check it out. I love that beat. I love that record. I love the artists. Summertime Magic. Make sure you check it out. Listen, do me a favor. We do this every week. Download that record. Support great music. But don't do it from a torrent site. It's $1.29. That's the least we can do, you know, to support the music. And if you don't have $1.29, the third legend, Kamari Ellis, is in the studio in the back. He'll help you put a financial plan together so that you can pay iTunes and Google Play. Look, the Goodfellas are in the studio. Greg Thorne, real estate expert, CEO of The Winning Hand Publishing. His book, The Winning Hand, Beginner's Guide for Success in Real Estate Investing. He's also had numerous classes to show people how to flip houses, how to become moguls in real estate. I have one in my hand. I'm going to treat y'all like the old school commercial. Sorry, my brother, you got to get your own. I'm going to make sure he also autographs this, because this is one of the books that Greg gives to his students that come through his classes. He also walks through them and deals with financing. If they don't have it, he brings it to the table bearing that the project is solid. This is 20 years of real estate investing. And then there's also G&J Financial Services, which covers all of that, credit counseling, the whole nine. When we talk about wealth building, these are the steps. And he is one of the brothers that I talk about, ensuring that we take care of the assets and bring the wealth back into the community and back into our families. It's an absolute pleasure having you on Heart of the City, brother.
Thank you, Malik. Thank you.
Long time coming, man. Long time coming. I'm excited about it. And to my immediate right, for those who are watching us on the streaming video, look, this brother here, there are some stories, and I'm going to make sure we get the respect that he deserves to him today. Brother D. Lee, he is more than just a stand-up comedian. He's a radio personality, HBO Networks. They know him well. He's one of the funniest voices on airwaves. He's been honored America's Favorite Radio Personality Award, HBO Zone. He's teamed up with Wendy Williams when they did the Dream Team. And we're going to talk about that, too, because there's some things y'all need to know that I'm going to break down. All right. He owned two of the nation's hottest premier comedy clubs in Philly and St. Louis. everything you know moving through Philly from a comedic perspective really got their start chomping with D. Lee.
That's what they say.
That's what they
That's
say.
That's what they say.
I seen it for myself. All right? I seen it. But then there's an amazing journey that he went on.
Mm-hmm.
God had this road to Damascus kind of thing happen with D. Lee. And God stepped in and D. Lee made a which I think is one of the most honorable decisions out of your whole career, to follow him and to take a walk. And so he tours the country now telling his story. And he also has a syndicated show, the D. Lee Show right now, and a media production company that has some amazing things in the works, man. It's an honor to have you back in Philly.
It's an honor to be here, man.
Man,
it's an honor to be here.
I've been excited about this show, doing cartwheels about this show.
You know, what's funny is I have that exact same shirt, except mine is blue with white dots.
Wow.
And I was going to wear it today, and my 10-year-old said, nah, wear the other shirt.
Yeah,
that would have been hilarious.
That would have been. That would have been. So the one thing I like about D-Lee's Instagram, too, we both are into this sneaker thing. So we.
Oh, dude. Shouts out to Nike.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm with you on the Nike.
You know what I mean?
On the Nike loafer ministry today.
I chucked them all.
All right. Look. The big money came out and threw the red bottoms on the table.
You know, we talked about that out there.
Yeah.
So shouts out to Nike, you know, striking a deal with them. And, and I appreciate everything that they send.
Yeah, listen, God is good all the time.
You know?
So let's dig into this first. I want to give respect first. I need y'all to really understand some of the stuff that you see today. Some people will not admit it, but their start was influenced, some heavily influenced by, and some wouldn't have even got in the door if it was not for the efforts of D. Lee here in this city, not only as an entrepreneur with the comedy club, but also in radio.
Yeah.
You were an integral part of the Dream Team.
Mm-hmm.
What we know as Philly Morning Radio.
Right.
You
the original Breakfast Club.
The original.
Right.
Before the Charlemagne. We had D. Lee, and it was right here. Charlemagne's a great guy.
Uh-huh.
But we had D. Lee, all right? So I need y'all to understand that. The other thing that I need you to understand is, and I'm going to do this. He's not going to do it, but I'm going to do it, okay? So there's a certain person that came from New York and then came to Philly.
Wendy Williams.
Yeah. Oh, see. All right, we good.
That's okay.
And so D. Lee had a character on the radio.
Shantae. Mm-hmm.
And we all knew D. Lee for saying,
How you doing?
Now, I'm a step off of it. Give it to him authentically.
How you doing?
I need y'all to understand, it came from D. Lee, okay? That certain person took it from Philly and from D. Lee and ran with it. And so every time they do that on that show, I mean, every time I see it, I'm like, no, that's my brother. She owes a check.
The internet does blow up over that.
Yeah, listen.
Talks about everywhere I go, they want to talk about
a
that.
A career started because of the work that you did with her on the morning show. And so I honor you, brother. We did not forget it.
Thank you.
We're going to make sure everybody knows that you're the one behind it, man.
I appreciate
it. And there are others that shared a lot of, you know, Kobe Cole was on there.
Yeah.
Q Deezy. I remember the Power 99, little card that y'all used to have, the talent
with all
card.
Of us on there.
With all of y'all on there. Q Deezy had the cornrows looking like crisscross.
Right.
Out there. You were here through all of the surges.
I was the last, member. I was the first original member. And then it sounds like a group, right?
A
recording group. Right. I was the first original member because the way it came about was weird is that I came in, from being on 103 The Beat as just the street guy. I was getting paid $50 a week.
Wow.
$50 a week. And that's what I tell people when you get into stand up or you get into radio. Don't, even to this day when I speak, don't do something for the money. Do it for the passion, the passion will turn into the money.
There you go.
So I was doing it for $50 a week, but then people were trying to figure out, well, how's he driving a Range Rover? Is he doing something? Is he doing something illegal?
Yeah.
And I wasn't, man. I was on that stage every week, and then what I wound up doing is saying, hey, okay, you're gonna give me $50 a week, but I tell you what, why don't we negotiate where you give me promos?
There you go.
They aren't listed as commercials,
right.
So I'm not taking up your inventory,
right.
But give me promos. promos. I'm gonna tag your radio station on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we just play them throughout the week to promote my comedy shows. Well, the comedy shows turned into one Thursday a night to one show a Thursday, two shows a Thursday, mm-hmm. to selling out to where my revenue was coming from, and then it became, whoa, let's renegotiate
this. Right.
But then I had to learn the business side of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I learned how to negotiate it. And then at that time, Power 99 was, mm-hmm. it was the bigger station, and they made a phone call to me. I'll never forget. Shouts out to Helen Little,
yeah.
who was the PD at that time. And she said, hey, you know, can you meet us at a cafe in Roxborough?
Okay.
And it was like an old Italian mafia meeting.
Uh-huh.
And I walk into the cafe, and her and Dave Allen are in the corner of this cafe. And I'm like, what is going on here?
Right.
And they came in and they said, hey, we want you to come over to Power. And I said, really? And we're going to give you $14,000 and benefits. And I'm like, whoa, man,
it's on.
Right. But I said, hey, I need these commercials.
Yeah.
Because now I'm on a bigger platform.
Listen to the entrepreneurship,
you know what I mean?
In this.
So I'm on a bigger platform, and I'm like, wow. And I'm in my 20s. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I go to do this. I'm able to purchase the comedy club from this.
Right.
You know, and then when I came over, it was Carter and Sanborn, mm-hmm. and Wendy,
mm-hmm.
and D. Lee was the sidekick.
Right.
And then it became, I remember Sanborn saying, hey, D, get ready. And I said, what? And 2 days later, they were leaving. Carter and Sanborn, who were the legends,
wow. yeah.
and you know, morning radio, were leaving. And now it's me and Wendy.
Right.
And Wendy never looked at me in the studio. I remember that was her first thing. She would never look at you. She'll talk to you, but it's like you interviewing Malik and I'm not looking at you.
Wow.
So she wouldn't look at me. And I was like, what is this? And I've heard story. I'm like, man, I'm going to break this cycle. Forget that.
Right.
And then they brought over Tony Richards, who was mm-hmm. who had originally brought me into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tony Richards came over, and then Tony Richards left. And then it was me, Wendy, and Kobe. And then it was me, Wendy, Kobe, and Q. And then it wound up being me, Danya. It just got ridiculous.
Right.
You know, and the tables kept turning, but I was still there.
You were the constant.
You know, I just stayed there and stayed there. And mm-hmm. Then I got the deal with HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, hey, you know, I got a deal with HBO. You know, they want to send me on tour this summer. And, you know, I'm going to be a personality.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. Yeah. Well, the day my tour bus pulls up in front of the station,
right.
I was like, I told you guys, I'm leaving.
I'm rolling. Right.
And they're like, no. So we signed a deal where I was doing my characters via phone.
Wow.
Kept a contract. Shouts out to my agent, Merle Scott.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
There you go.
You know, I got the agent and everybody involved, learned some more things. And then from there, I just wound up growing, and I would call in with my characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Tyler Perry and I would go back and forth on the phone, you know, mm-hmm. his character. He would have Madea.
Right.
And I would have Aunt Ruthie, and we'd go back and forth. And, you know, of course, with that, Shantae came about because of the fact that Wendy had a large gay audience.
Right.
You know, and it was like, okay, well, how can I, you know, still grab that audience?
Right.
And that's when I created Shantae. And with the how you doing, and people would come in and they go, hey, what's up? And then I go, how you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And just became, you know, a schlick.
Yep.
And then Wendy would communicate with Shantae back and forth, and it would get bigger, you know, and next, you know, she gave me a call and said, hey, I'm going to New York,
right.
you know, and I was in Vegas at the time, and I was like, really? And she said, well, I want you to come with me. Now I'm old enough to know the numbers game.
Yeah.
So I said, well, all right, what are we talking? Well, we'll talk. So I had a couple of days off. Later that afternoon, I get a call from the radio, say, yo, we need to talk to you too. And they were like, we think Wendy's leaving. I'm like, oh, you think?
Yeah.
So I come back and we negotiate another number that keeps me here. But I made it where I can go up and hang with her on her show, not as an employee, just to hang with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I would do the character up there. And one day I get a call and they're like, yo, man, are you in New York? And I'm like, no, why, what's up? And they're like, no, we just heard you on the radio. I'm like, what are you talking about? You just heard me on the radio. Yeah, no, you didn't. Yeah, we just heard Shantae. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So I called a studio, and it turned into a, look, man, we got to talk.
Right.
And that talk never came.
Wow.
And everything went from there.
Wow.
You know, so I'm happy for her success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got love for her and her success. And I think if we see each other now, my thing is, let's have a conversation.
Right.
I'm not looking for no conversation because I'm past it now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm past it now.
Yeah. But it's the respect of
it is.
What occurred because, you know, as it relates to media culture,
right?
You were the guy everyone looked to because you had longevity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when everything else was transitioning, everybody knew D. Lee would still be there,
and
the characters, right? Mm-hmm. And from my opinion, you were the first local media mogul that we knew.
people because say you that. I still, I still haven't. I'm trying to recognize that. Right. But when I walk on South Street to this day, people go, "Yo, D. Lee," and I'm "Hey," like it's still.
Listen, brother Bilal Qayyum.
Yeah.
He texted me last night, like, "Yo, tell D." I said, "What's up? That's my man." You know, and you have this respect still amongst the gangsters, the good fellas, you know,
right.
The executives.
Right, we're talking about that. Yeah, we're talking about that.
Everybody loves D. Lee. And so it's great to hear that story. And there's a whole another generation that didn't even know.
Right.
So it was important that they heard your story
today.
Right, You know, because they think Philly radio starts with some of the other folk now.
Philly radio has went through such a change, man. I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. When I get asked about my opinion of Philly radio, when I did radio in Philadelphia, it was the fact that we embraced the community and we embraced the people.
Yeah.
So one story that just stands out is I remember a woman had lost her home to a fire. Wow. And she had three children. She lost everything. And I said, look, let's take a bucket and go out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember standing on Broad and Spring Garden, and we took a bucket on Broad and Spring Garden and raised all this money for her.
Wow.
And now you don't see that nowadays.
No.
You don't see us embrace what's happening in the community. You don't hear us. You may hear us talk about a story, but I don't hear the radio getting involved with it. Like, you know what?
Right.
I'm going down here to camp out in this neighborhood until we get some answers. I'm going down here to let's raise this money for this family that we know is being done wrong, whether it's through fire, it's through starvation, it's through, you know, just the simple fact of injustice.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We don't get involved because instead of, my opinion, personalities developing their brand and giving back, they're worried about the corporate side of it. Well, if you develop your brand, the corporate is standing right there
beside
you.
Right.
They're
going to come.
Right. I mean, look at it. I'm not on any quote unquote what people may consider major stuff, but I'm making major stuff happen.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what people got to get a grip of. And again, if you're looking at success as being money, then you have the wrong definition of success.
And you're never going to get it.
Exactly.
You're never
going to get it. You know what I'm saying?
And I remember you hitting us on Instagram, and I appreciated the love that you gave me.
Oh, no problem.
And that lesson, because you hit me with that same lesson.
Right.
Like, look, keep doing what you're doing, but don't chase that bread, young
buck. Don't chase the dollar.
Nah, don't do it.
Don't chase the dollar. The dollar come to you. I turned 50 in April.
Beautiful.
You know what I mean?
Great.
I turned 50 in April. And the success that me and my partner, who's my wife, that we have, it wasn't built overnight. But, dude, we're happy.
Yeah.
Like, I wake up peaceful and happy.
Do y'all hear that?
You know what I'm saying?
That's important because so many of us chase the dollar.
We chase
what we think is success. There is nothing worse than having everything in your mind but no peace.
Do you know how many rich friends I have that, you know, are considered rich but are miserable?
Going through it.
You know what I mean? Some of them are in the news, but they're miserable.
Yeah.
And more importantly, they chased it. They chase it for other people, though.
Right.
Yeah.
They're not even chasing it for themselves.
I got to keep this up for the gram, for real.
Yeah.
Because now I'm at 500,000 followers, so I can't let go of this.
True story. This is a true story. This bugs me out when I talk about this. True story. We have a deal that was on the table.
Okay.
You know what I mean? For a show that I wrote. So they're like, oh, man, you know, we want you. And one of the execs goes, well, you know, your social media following. I notice you aren't strong on social media. And I'm not. I just don't know why I don't get on it. I just got other things to do. And I'm not knocking those that are on it.
We were the test dummies for that stuff,
you know what I mean?
We weren't worried about it. It was MySpace and maybe something, AOL Black Voices chat room.
I'm like, look, dude, if you want to research, you know, I had 50,000 followers on that, you know, back then. But now I'm doing other things. Every time I don't have time to stop and take a picture.
So
I said, you know, I looked at my attorney. I'm like, look, you know, I don't think I want this deal. And she was like, well, what do you mean? I said, because I want this deal based on somebody who believes in this concept.
Right.
Not somebody who believes that their social media following has to be 20,000 plus and that's going to make it successful.
Because
that product could suck.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And social media, you can have 20,000 followers and it doesn't translate into converted sales.
You're right about that.
Whatever. Because there's a bunch of people that's social media heavy and can't get those same people in the room. They can't get 10 folk in the room.
Exactly. Because if you can get 99 cents and you got 20,000 followers, you can't grab 99 cents from each one.
Come on. What are we talking about?
Then it's a problem.
What are we talking about?
You see what I'm saying?
And the financial mogul in the back, Kamar.
It's a problem.
Kamar nodded his head the moment we went in that direction. And so let's deal with that. Greg, you're doing real estate.
Absolutely.
Right? And real estate has become hot on social media too, right? That's the next thing. Everybody's showing the house they're flipping. You know, they got their Home Depot, Instagram photo going.
So let me just dive right in.
Let's get into this, man.
Let me say this to you guys. Listen. If it was that easy, right, we all would be doing it.
Exactly.
Right. So let's just keep it real. It's not easy.
Yeah.
It's your passion, as D said. But at the end of the day, you can be trained to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to put your time in. You got to put some work in. I'm not telling you can make $20,000 in 5 days.
Right.
But I am telling you that you can meet 5 people that can help you earn $1,000 without doing any labor, physical work. So you got to put the work in. That's the problem. And then the social media is so huge. People call me all the time. Hey, I want to join your programs. I want to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking to get involved because of the money,
right?
We're not going to be a good fit.
You're going to miss it. And your expectation is going to be off of
absolutely,
what's real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. So go ahead, man. Just
no. And so you've seen the scene in a couple different fronts. All of us have gone through the entertainment. You and I, Philly
absolutely.
Unplugged on a weekly basis.
Shout out
D Lee, you know, holding down on not just the comedy scene in front of the mic, but then also behind it in the operations. We've seen the money come into the city in major ways.
Yes.
Absolutely. Major ways. There were days when I was walking out with duffel bags out of Emerald City,
That's right.
And very few of us kept the work ethic up to translate it into lasting assets.
Mm-hmm.
We blew a lot of that.
Right? Oh, I got lost in some of it.
Yeah. We blew a lot of it. And so now we're coming back to that and realizing we missed the boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Emerald City, I remember, I'll never forget, shout out to Lil Troy, who I did Emerald City with. And so me, Lil Troy, and Joe Doc, after hours, only from 2 to 3:30.
Mm-hmm.
$20 a head, almost $50 on the cut line, and at 3 o'clock, the cut line went to $100.
It was crazy. Mm-hmm.
It was crazy.
And I witnessed it, so
and there are no, and I can tell you straight up, listeners, I need y'all to understand this. There were no houses purchased.
Right.
From
right.
all that money right. that I grabbed.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stupidest decisions that I could have ever made. And so now we're here.
I bought 2 fur coats.
Yeah.
Following Steve Brody
come
from
on,
the dude on Gerard Avenue.
Come on.
I'll never forget that.
Trying to hang with Brody and Diaz.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
And the thing about it, though, here's the thing. Like you guys said, here's the thing. Conversions. You know, for the financial people that don't understand conversions, those followers, if you can get, like you said, you can get those guys to go from a follow a click to a funnel where they're now on your page purchasing your material.
Right.
Whether,
absolutely.
That's what you want.
Absolutely.
So if you got 200, if you got 20,000 engaged followers, that's going to go from, you know, like to a conversion.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you're doing some things.
Yeah.
But just having people, hey, I like that. Hey, I'm following you. It doesn't really mean anything.
Right. Listen, 250. Right. With 80% conversion.
There you go.
Absolutely.
Is far greater than 2,000 with 3%
right.
conversion.
Right.
I totally agree.
And they're going to keep rocking with you
right.
and stay with you. And so you're in real estate, something that's sexy to everybody right now because everybody wants.
I love real estate.
So D's in it too.
I love real estate.
So you're leading the way, Greg. You're doing these classes, the investor classes. You're doing these workshops
the
over
teaching.
The weekend, these intensive. Right. Training well, sessions.
And
how is
keyword.
That going? Are,
it's going
how's
well.
The people? How are the people responding to these kind of opportunities?
Well, here's what I'm seeing on a regular, Malik. People want opportunity. A lot of people want opportunity. They're looking for another way out.
Okay.
And they're seeing this. Okay, I can learn this from this guy because I teach people. I train you. I don't just give you a workbook and say, here, talk from the stage.
Yeah,
we're
going
to go through this interaction. We're going to talk about what these things mean.
Right.
We're going to get to the bottom line. So people like the fact that they can learn this in a way that it's on same way with the book. It's easy read.
Right.
The book.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
they like an easy read because it's set up for anybody to do.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, if I got 20 people in a room and I got 7 students that can go out of there and know how to do a deal the correct way, it means a lot to me, brother.
Yeah.
And
it means a lot to our culture.
Right.
Because they become asset creators
absolutely.
For our culture. Right.
Absolutely.
D, you're doing the same thing even from the production side. And we know this content is king.
It's king.
So it becomes a cost preventative measure for us to own the station, the dial, the tower, the FCC license.
Right.
Now it's like Doritos. You crunch, we'll make more.
Right.
I got this covered. And so you're doing it from the asset creation from that perspective. Talk about why it's important for us to own our content.
I think the reason for owning is we were talking earlier in the lobby of how I thought when they let me branch off on my own, gave me my own opportunity. And notice that's what I said. They gave it to me. Mm-hmm. And it was the D. Lee Morning Show.
Right.
When it was time for me to move on to another situation, I went to take the D. Lee Morning Show, and I didn't realize I didn't own the name, the D. Lee
wow.
Morning Show.
Hear that, guys?
Wow.
I didn't own the name, and everyone yes. knew the D. Lee Morning Show. So every website,
yes.
social media, everything with the D. Lee Morning Show, I'm like, whoa, I don't own this?
Right.
And then we had to switch it to the D. Lee Show, which I own.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it was like, wow. So and the fact, the matter of owning your own, I always say this. When you own your own, there's two ways you can go. You could be successful or you mm-hmm. could fail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Either way you go, mm-hmm. it's up to you. You can go to his class all day. Sit yeah. there all day. But if you don't put the work in, the success is not going to come into it.
Amen, brother.
You know what
Amen,
I mean?
Amen, brother.
Yep. My wife and I, you know, we have Lee Luxury Properties.
Beautiful.
So with Lee Luxury Properties, one day we sat back and I said, babe, okay, you riding around with these clients
mm-hmm.
4 weeks, 5 weeks. And on the fifth week, a client may go, you know what? We're going to change our mind and just wait and build up some more for another 6 months.
Right.
Well, you done wasted 5 weeks of her yeah, time, gas, right. mileage, yeah. and everything else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I told my wife, after I started seeing this, seeing her sell homes and things like that, but then we started seeing more clients say, maybe we're not ready. Maybe we're not ready.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And we're telling you this from the beginning.
Right.
No, you're not ready for that type of mortgage. But that's right. what – well, this is what we want to see, and yeah. we're prepared for – all right, you know, we walk through those steps, but it becomes a waste of time. And I told my wife, I said, you know what?
Tax will build to
forget,
it.
Right. I said, forget that. Mm. Let's sit back, purchase mm-hmm. a home that we could redevelop, mm-hmm. renovate, mm-hmm. and now let's keep it and rent it out.
There you go.
Because of the fact, if we keep buying us
mm-hmm.
and flipping, at some point we're like, you know, keep buying and flip. I said, let's start building. So that's why we decided to purchase. Let's go ahead and purchase homes.
Right.
You know what I mean? And let's go ahead and rent them out. Because somebody's always going to be in a position of they need mm-hmm. to rent a home.
Listen, I'll never
because we don't want to, I hate to say this, but we don't want to establish our credit. We're afraid yeah. to look at our credit.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
afraid to look at it.
Yeah. It's horrible.
We're afraid to look at our debt so we can see how much we actually have to dig out from.
That so it's funny because I started that maybe about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So now Credit Karma's, I'm on that day.
Oh yeah.
You know, my Amex.
Every Saturday.
Yeah, I gotta look every right. day to see what's going
trade
on.
Because lines. It also, people trade don't know about trade lines.
Right, right, yeah. right, right. You gotta, and some of that stuff is just, is devoid of our conversations mm-hmm. in the community. And so,
I had a conversation today, dude. This is serious with my dad and we were sitting there talking and I said, Dad, you know, we're talking about the afterlife when it's time for him mm-hmm. to go home and mm-hmm. how we as just a black family needs to be prepared for that. How we don't have these conversations till after my mom is dead.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Then we wonder who gets the house.
Yeah,
or how
right.
we, yeah, yeah. how we paying for yep. the funeral and yep. all that. And thank yep. God, you know, my family is cool. But then when we started talking, I said, Dad, well, you know, your life insurances, what are they and where are they? Cause I don't know. And
right,
he's like, oh man, I got this. I got that. But then I'm sitting there and I'm going, well, how many people don't have this conversation?
Right.
Many of them, brother.
Tons.
You know what I mean?
Tons.
And we aren't prepared for this. And yep. I noticed the hesitation even in my own father.
Mm-hmm.
He was
mm-hmm.
just,
right, right.
he was hesitant to talk about
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
I'm like, Dad, we need to talk about it because when you go,
mm-hmm.
when that time
mm-hmm.
does come, I don't want to be sitting back here arguing with people.
Yeah. And that's not, that really shouldn't even be a solemn conversation in our community.
Right.
It's, mm-hmm.
look, but it is.
I want to make sure that y'all eat and eat well.
Right.
And I'm not going to leave you with no debt. So,
right.
So let's have this conversation now. Let's
right.
get the living will together now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put the trust together
right.
now. Mm-hmm. And so now let me ask you,
mm-hmm.
your clients, are they coming with that kind of stuff together, or is that an opportunity for you guys to teach that and instill that?
Yeah,
in the
there is opportunity. Well, what we do with Lee Luxury Properties is, and my wife is starting to develop it even more, is if Jane Doe comes to us
mm-hmm.
and says, hey, I want to buy a house. First thing, okay, let's check your credit.
Yeah.
And let's see what you have saved and dedicated to this
mm-hmm.
house.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because
mm-hmm.
you got to be prepared
mm-hmm.
for your closing costs. You got to be prepared
sure.
for your
yep.
escrow. You got to
yep.
be prepared for your quote unquote down payment.
Yeah.
And those change with your credit report.
Right.
You know what I mean? How
right.
much you're going to put down, your percentages change
yep.
and things like that. And then our goal is, okay, if you aren't fully ready for this,
yeah.
we're not just going to drop you off. Most realtors would drop you off if you can't spend
right.
200 plus.
Right.
We're not going to drop you off. Our goal after that is, okay, you know what? We're going to direct you over here and show you what you need to get changed or taken off your credit report, what you need to pay off, and let's show you how to build this back up to get the numbers to where you need to be. Because you can get, tell me if I'm wrong, you can get a mortgage with a 560 credit score. Your credit score, your percentage is going to be ridiculous. But the bottom line is, let's teach you how to get past that. It's like I used to do on my show. We used to do a paternity test on my show. And people used to do it because of the wildness. You know, oh, you're the father. And I used to do it on my radio show. But if I found out you were the father, I just didn't leave you there, especially our youth. These young men haven't shown. I didn't just leave you there. I had someone there who was going to show you and direct you and take you through classes of how to be a father.
So let's take that.
It's about developing.
Greg, there are tons of us in the community finding out that we are fathers, right? But fathers of opportunities in the community. And we may not necessarily be prepared to handle it, right? And so these opportunities are chock full in our neighborhoods. The developers have not taken everything. That's the first thing people need to understand. The big bad developer from New York has not swept up the city yet. There are tons of opportunities that exist.
You being kind. The Asian guy from down the block.
It's
real.
It's on. But we have the opportunity to deal with gentrification ourselves. We don't have to just wait to go to city council and scream every Thursday. We can make the move to stop it. Greg, how do we do that? Because you're doing the credit counseling and D-Lee, all you guys are doing the same thing, which is so important. How do we get them to stop some of the major issues we're dealing with in the redlining that's
happening?
Well,
the first thing you got to do is understand what you can really get into. Like he said, most of the things he spoke about was 100% accurate. You can't start talking about trying to own a home until you clean up your backyard. So you got to start somewhere. It's not going to go anywhere. Credit's not going anywhere. All that 7-year stuff, that's a bunch of crap.
And don't believe the hype that you're going to meet, because I hear this now, you're going to meet somebody up in the Northeast that's going to give you another social security number for $1,500.
Don't believe the hype. They said that a long time ago. So you don't get caught
up in don't
that.
Do that.
So the best way to do that is sit down with someone and have a conversation about where you want to go. Because once I know where you want to go, I can direct you. I can put you in the right position, point you in the right position. The gentleman to my back, he's not on air, but I mean, when people come see
Kamari
me,
Ellis.
Typically when they come see me, we want to look at 1040s and financial docs. More than likely, 80% of the time, they're because what we're told in the hood is that, hey, you know, especially all our entrepreneurs out there, they go to these tax preparers. People that makes like $8 an hour that work at H&R Block, don't know a clue about what's really going on with taxes. And they say, well, what do you want to do? Well, I don't want to owe.
So you deduct all your stuff.
And you end up talking about, I was making $40,000 a year. Now you walk
now
around.
Now you showing six.
Showing $6,000, but you don't owe nobody. Now you call me January, April, got your taxes back, I'm ready to rock. I'm saying, where are we going with this?
Because you can't show the income.
You came by here at Good Jordans with $6,000.
So we gotta
get trained. We gotta get educated.
So that's a major part, right? Because I want people to understand that. So we did this last week. We told you about the NACA meeting. We brought and shout out to Dr. Stephen Avger, Greater St. Matthew. 200 plus folk got to sit down with NACA. 100 and some set up their appointments to start their journey, right? And one of the biggest conversations that we talk about, you got to show the income,
right?
Absolutely.
You can do all the Donald Trump hide the IRS stuff after you're in the house,
right?
But you got to come to the table, showing something,
right? You got to show something. You know, what I mean, a lot of people want to buy the toys and do all the things first, but you can do that deduction stuff after you get all your hobbies and toys. And quite frankly, man, you know, I just had a scenario. A great friend of mine, I wanted to help her. I helped her twice. You know, helped her mom out. Put her mom in a beautiful home, and she says, I got her in daycare, beautiful daycare center. She's doing well financially. She had a ton of money. She's making money, but she come to me want to buy something that was like $340. Good deal, too. Nice home. But the only problem we had is that her income tax showed like she only take $20,000. Where are we going to go?
It's going to be
difficult. You want to go down Fourth and Diamond?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult.
Like, it's tough. Right. Banks don't even lend that kind of money.
So let's talk about this. I'll tell you guys, you know, look, in that hour – we only got 60 minutes to get through it, but I have over 60 years of experience in the room. Same here today. I mean, it's about 130 years of experience between all of these great brothers. So let's do this really quickly. What do you have coming up that folks can get engaged, get in the room with you, and start the journey the right way?
Okay, we got two events coming up. So Saturday, August 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, August 18th, Greatness Center. It's on Ridge Avenue.
Yeah.
We're going to do the home ownership and credit repair. It was scheduled in July. I had some personal stuff. We pushed it off.
Mm-hmm.
That boot camp, that particular boot camp is going to be for anyone who's trying to go from the bottom to the middle.
Okay.
We're going to get you to the top because it takes time.
Yep.
You got to grow. Stop trying to go from
ground one.
Get solid. We're going to get you solid.
Pour some concrete.
We're going to talk about how to get started.
Yeah.
Get you in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's August 18th from 10 to 2 p.m.
Okay.
All right. The next event is the 23rd for the gurus, the real estate guys, people that want to get into business.
Yep.
And I'm being real honest about this. I mean, please, God, don't believe what you hear and what you see.
Yeah.
You got to get in. You got to get in. Michael Phelps is the greatest swimmer, one of the greatest swimmers.
Mm-hmm.
But he cannot lead any of us how to swim unless we get in the water.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He can tell us how to do it all day long. But until we actually get in the trenches, that's when he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And with this flipping game, I mean, and D. Lee can tell you that, it's tough, man. You can lose a lot.
So this one on the 23rd is for those
This
folks.
Is for those
Where's
who want to – this is at the Greatness Center as well.
Greatness Center as well. What
August
time?
23rd is going to be 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
August 23rd, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., the Greatness Center on Ridge Avenue.
And this particular event is going to show you how to get into real estate investing without using a lot of money. No money at all. I mean, when I say no money, don't crucify me. You can need some money.
Yeah.
But seed capital. But we're not talking about – you got to come with $30,000. You got to have good credit. I'm going to show you how to do some wholesaling. How to go from A to B and build up a cash cow a little bit. Now you can do some flipping. All right.
So guys, I want you guys to get it the right way. Okay. Do the system, do the process. Joel Embiid is not the only one who's trusting the process. You need to trust it too and learn that it is a process. But if you go through it and you do it properly, there will be a great outcome. Make sure you check that out on the 23rd for those who are seeking to be real estate investors. And what's the first one? Let's pour the concrete on.
The first one is the actual home buyer credit counseling.
What day is that?
That's going to be the 18th of August.
That's the 18th of August. And then the 23rd is for the gurus. D. Lee.
Yes, sir.
The empire is running strong, man. Tell them where they can follow the D. Lee Show.
You said
everything
it.
You guys are doing. Oh, see?
The D. Lee Show.
Look at God.
Real simple.
Look at God working.
The D. Lee Show. We keep it simple, man. We're working on a project now that we've been pitching for a while. And my goal, as I told everyone on the team, is to come back to Philly and cast it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we just stay working. I started my 90 days of motivation 10 days ago. Today is day 10, where every day I just give you a little something to get your day started. You know, that, and
make sure
it's basically, it's not just benefiting those that hear it, but it's also benefiting me too, to give it out. You know
Make sure you go check out D. Lee's 90 Days of Motivation. I'm following him. You should follow him too. Heart of the City is following him. Greg Thorne as well. Make sure you check him out August 18th and the 23rd.
Great.
Let's pour some concrete at the Greatness Center. And then let's build something on it.
Absolutely.
On the 23rd as well. I love both of you brothers,
Thank
man.
You
I'm excited of the great work that you guys are doing. It's an honor to be here. Kamari! It's great to have you in the studio with us as well. Lance on social media, Ed's on AV, Teresa's on PR. Thank you so much for tuning in to the show, The Good Fellas. We talk with two of the great ones here in Philadelphia. You can check us out on social media, Heart City Radio, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. As always, feel beautiful, look beautiful, and act beautiful. Why? Because you truly are beautiful. See you next week.